Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Just going to drop a little bit of knowledge on you this morning. Do you know that almost 40,000 veterans are without shelter across the United States at any given night? 40,000. So the leading causes, this is according to national statistics this morning, the leading causes of homelessness among vets are PTSD, no real surprise there, social isolation, unemployment, and substance abuse. And veterans account for over 10%, about 11% of homeless adults in the U.S. It's a serious problem. And gosh, I wish that was at the top of our list for resources and providing housing, providing jobs, providing security for the men and women who sacrifice their lives and give up the ultimate for all of us to live the lives that we get to live. But that's not the reality. However, there is a very special nonprofit organization right here in Bridgeport, Connecticut, that does exactly that. It houses veterans. It sometimes will set them up with their own housing and even gives them opportunities to potentially get jobs and to just get back on their feet and feel like they are supported. And it's hitting a major milestone next week. We're very excited about it. Vince Santilli is here this morning with Homes for the Brave. Vince, welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure to have you. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa, and thanks so much for having us on and for sharing the statistics that you just shared. And we are doing tremendous here. Plenty of challenges, but lots of blessings. And we're so excited about the 20th anniversary celebration coming up a week from today.
Yeah, it's an amazing milestone. Vince is the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director for Homes for the Brave, which, again, located in Bridgeport. We'll give you all the details on that. Vince, how did Homes for the Brave get started 20 years ago?
Well, 20 years ago, some people who were visionaries, including Dr. Laurie Harkness, including Tony Cinquanta, who both were working at the VA in West Haven at that time, just saw a need for this type of facility. Many of our veterans get treated, of course, by and at the VA, and yet they saw, okay, what happens when then they're in between, when they're in between a scenario of either being discharged, or many of them had been discharged years or even decades ago, and now there's a little struggle. So they thought, wow, an organization is really needed to help them get back on track and prepare them to become permanently housed, which is our mission.
So in 20 years, do you feel like it has accomplished more than you ever could have imagined? Do you feel like there's so much more to be done? What are your thoughts as you look back on 20 years?
Well, just, Melissa, based on the statistics that you shared when you opened this segment of the show, we obviously there's still much work to be done, and not just in Connecticut, but across the nation. And I should say Connecticut has overall done a terrific job of at least identifying veterans and then getting them to organizations like ours that could help them. And when we look at, and we're preparing now, we're in the final throes of preparing our annual report from last year, the year that ended June 30th. So that annual report always comes out right around November 1. And if you look at in that past year, 76% of our clients were diagnosed with a mental illness, 70% with a substance abuse disorder, 96% with any disability. So when you look at that, you say these are men and women who have served our country and now are struggling, whether it be with PTSD, with overcoming an addiction. And that's what our expertise is in getting them, helping them find employment, helping them deal with the issues that they're dealing with to get them prepared to not just become permanently housed, but really, I think, to be a positive force in the communities that they're moving to.
We're talking this morning to Vince Santilli, who is, again, the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director for Homes for the Brave. Where are you located in Bridgeport for people who aren't familiar, Vince?
Well, our headquarters is right on Park Avenue, 655 Park Avenue, in the heart of the South End. And then we have the first and only home in the state of Connecticut exclusively for female veterans and their young children, the Medeiros House, which is here in the West End. We have a permanent home in the Black Rock section of Bridgeport. And then just this year, Melissa, we've opened two houses in West Haven.
Wow.
Both within blocks of the VA Medical Center, a total of 14 beds out there. And those are for male veterans, again, experiencing homelessness.
That's amazing.
And then the big thing is our annex in downtown Bridgeport, One Lafayette Circle, which is technically on Fairfield Avenue. That is non-residential, but that is where veterans from the community, in the community, and their family members, for the first time in our history, we could serve their family members as well. And they can come. We feature individual and group therapy, follow-up case management. We even have an emergency food pantry there, and we've got a lot of exciting things happening there. We've had a heck of a time hiring a therapist. We just hired one earlier this week, just a wonderful young woman who will start next month, and so we're just so excited about that facility. I've got one of these days when you're down this way, Melissa, I've got to give you a quick tour.
I would love that. Yeah, I don't think I've been to Homes for the Brave in person since the mid-2010s. I think around 2015 was the last time I had been there. So I would love an updated tour. That would be amazing. And I know you as you just mentioned, had some recent expansions, which are great. Any plans, Vince, to add more locations across Connecticut or even cross state borders?
Well, you know what, Melissa? We haven't really looked at any of that because we're trying to focus our energies and our efforts on serving the men and women who
Sure.
need our help, who have served our country. And the West Haven situation, the annex, some of that, in a sense, just fell out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing that was just announced a couple months back is we are expanding this facility to include private rooms with their own restrooms, okay? Not increasing the number of beds, but the big thing is we will be putting an elevator in this building, which is sorely needed. If you've seen one of our veterans with a cane trying to walk from the basement all the way up to the third floor, it's a little scary. And so we are so excited. That project is slated to be completed by September 30th of 23. So we have, a year and a week to get that done. And this is just so exciting. This is going to be, I think, a game changer for us.
That's so wonderful. And again, the 20th anniversary party is next Friday. And it's just an incredible honor. And obviously, I hope for nothing short of complete success for Homes for the Brave. Vince, really quick, how many people would you say on average you guys serve?
Well, we have served over 1,500 since inception, and in any given year, we've served up to 200 here in our residential facilities. And now with the annex, we're seeing veterans and family members from the community coming in that need our help. So that number is going to, I believe, exponentially increase.
That's so beautiful. Well, Vince, I thank you. And for all the fine folks who work at Homes for the Brave, thank you all for the work that you do and the continued work for the next 20 plus years for Homes for the Brave. And congratulations on your 20-year anniversary. Very exciting.
Thanks so much, Melissa. And we'll see you next Friday.
I look forward to it. Vince Santilli with Homes for the Brave here on WICC and a 20-year milestone for Homes for the Brave. Really incredible stuff. Well, you may remember this fine fellow, Hal Rosnick, attorney Harold Hal Rosnick, I should say. He created what's called the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. And as I mentioned, we crossed paths, Hal and I did. I think a year ago, Hal, right? You and I crossed paths and we were able to talk about your story? I think so. Was it last year?
Good morning, Melissa. And
good morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. It's been a year.
Yes, that's what I thought. I love this story. And I think the sole purpose of this nonprofit organization is just incredible. So, Hal, welcome to the show. Yes, I get excited when I get to talk to people who just inspire me. And you're one of those people, Hal.
You're too kind.
No, I'm serious. I think you're great. Tell us a little bit about the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. You started this nonprofit when?
About a year and a half ago. Probably going on 2 years at this point, actually.
Okay. And what is the purpose of it? What is it all about?
Well, I guess our purpose is pretty much stated in our mission statement, which is to try and improve the lives of young people by instilling in them, through the disciplines of boxing and martial arts, the behaviors, attitudes, disciplines, motivations, and character necessary to live healthy, happy lives.
And my understanding about this, Hal, is it's not just for young boys. It's also for girls, which I think is very neat, because oftentimes when you think boxing, I think most people don't think females typically.
Yeah, typically, but it absolutely includes females. In fact, we had Martin Chisholm's daughter was a national champion trained through the pub. So, yes, we have young women and girls participating in the program from as young as 7 years old.
Wow. That's amazing. Why boxing for you, Hal? What was it about boxing that you felt like, I'm going to do a nonprofit and incorporate this sport specifically?
Well, my dad was always a big proponent of disciplined sports, whether it be boxing, wrestling, in modern days, mixed martial arts, have been shown that they're probably the most effective means, among other things, of developing a healthy body, a healthy mind, discipline, the disciplines necessary. But what really motivated us was the increase in gang violence. It just was getting out of control, and violence as a means of settling disputes. So empirical studies have shown that the most effective means to reduce this gang violence and membership in gangs is to participate in a recognized boxing program. Studies have shown we can, through boxing, avoid one violent act, we've been a success. Surely we want to do more, so we say, and I want to get to that. And what our boxing show coming up will emphasize is guns down, gloves up.
Because that's your motto, right?
It is.
Yeah. I love that. Oftentimes I'll talk to my parents and they'll say, we came from a time where, you know, if you got into a fight in the street, that's what it was. It was a fight in the street. You know, you punched it out and that was kind of the end of it. And that's just, and I'm not saying violence is ever the answer, but we now live in a time where you get into an argument and a lot of times you're seeing people just pull out a gun and say, you know what, game over. That's the time we live in now. And so this motto of guns down, gloves up, it is pretty timely, as you mentioned, with the world we're living in right now. What sort of drew you to wanting to respond to things like shootings and other violent incidents?
Well, we were aware of the fact when we established the club that many national studies have shown the relationship in terms of the reduction of violence and the reduction of participation in gangs. Our disciplined sports, such as boxing, such as wrestling, and pretty much can apply to any sport that requires dedication, that requires listening, that requires hard work, requires respect. Any of these sports go a long way in providing the outlets necessary for young people to avoid bad situations.
We're chatting this morning with Hal Rosnick, the creator of the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. And you said, how young are these boys and girls who could start? 7 years old? What is the age range?
Wow. Indeed, we have some 4 and 5 year olds. Obviously, they're not getting involved in contact boxing.
Sure.
But we have them in there at times as well.
Oh, how cute. And what is like the age range? Like, how old do you serve till?
Probably up to 24 or so.
Oh, wow. Young adults. Okay.
Yes.
Postgraduates. Okay. Wow, that's quite the range. That's amazing. So where is your facility located? Where are these participants coming from?
Well, if the listeners remember Stratford, the old AFCO facility in the south end of Stratford.
Yep.
The street that borders it on the south side is Sniffens Lane. We're at 360 Sniffens Lane. If you drove down Sniffens Lane about a quarter of a mile, it's on the left-hand side. And you could see the signage.
Now, Hal, your nonprofit does an incredible job, as you mentioned, in its very young life so far of this concept of guns down, gloves up. It gives empowerment. It gives confidence to young boys and girls. I think it's extraordinary. But I am curious, are you also trying to develop serious competitors or professional boxers?
Obviously, our goal is to meet our mission statement and to install values into our students. But all the students, not all, most of them have some natural competitiveness, and that motivates them to compete, whether it's on a local, state, or national level. We've had many national champions. We have the facilities and trainers to allow them to achieve those goals if that's the way they want to go. That's not our primary goal, but it's a natural adjunct of what we're doing.
I think it's just wonderful. Chick is here. We're talking about the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. And before we start talking about the fundraiser coming up in just a few days, Hal, who is Chick Rosnick?
Well, Chick's my dad. He was my dad. He trained and conditioned soldiers in boot camp in World War II. When he got back from the war, he took a job as a health and physical education director for some 37 years. He helped train and mentor probably thousands and thousands of children and adults. He was a legend to many. I know he's my dad, but I can't tell you how often, and right up to the present time, people come up to me how my dad did this for him, my dad did that for him. He really was well-known. He had a clear vision that athletics would provide discipline and the character necessary to succeed. I'd like to think that this club is a great representation of his life's work.
He sounds like a real boss. He sounds amazing. Wow. That has to be so neat that people still come up to you and talk about him.
Almost daily.
Wow. That's so beautiful. It's a real testament. And you know what? He would be so incredibly proud of what you are building with this boxing club and how many people you're servicing, which I meant to ask you that, Hal. I know you told me last year. But on average, how many people would you say you're serving through the boxing club?
That's a good question. Not enough. You know, 100 at this present time, probably, maybe some more. We're looking to joint venture with programs, the organized youth programs in the region, from Bridgeport, Stratford, Shelton, Milford. Actually, that's probably the main beneficiary of this year's gala will be an expansion of our program. Now that we're established, now that we've built this wonderful facility, people should come down and take a look. We have two rings, one of them brand new. We have new flooring. We have new lighting. The place is great. If you saw the Rocky movies, think of that type of gym, but nicer.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. That's very cool. Very nostalgic. So let's talk about this annual fundraiser. It's coming up in just a few days. What's it called? What is the event going to be like? What can people expect? All that good stuff.
Our second annual gala is this October 1st, not this Saturday coming up, next week. We're at Vizzano's Four Seasons. My good friend Vinny Noce has been kind enough to allow us to move the event to Stratford, which is where we want it. It's at 337 Kenyon Street in Stratford, and the event starts, I think dinner starts at 6, and the event at around 7, 7:30.
And you also have what's called a black tie amateur boxing dinner show. What is that? When is that?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, that's what it's called. Okay, making sure I got the same thing. Got it.
We have some 15 to 17 events on the card. It includes national, state, and local talent. It's a beautiful event. It's open to the public. We're going to sell out. We sold out last year. There's still some tickets left. You can have dinner and a show, the boxing show, for $65. For a ticket alone to see the show, it's $25. But anybody that is interested should make calls now.
Yeah, $25. Good Lord. So what number do they call? I mean, that's, I would think, like you said, you're going to sell out very quickly. Is there a website or a number they should call?
Yes, our director, a wonderful guy, ex-Marine Martin Chisholm, is the rock of the program, the lead trainer, and he can be reached at 203-551-4691, or you can go on to our website at info@chickrosnickboxingclub.com, and there'll be information and directions to follow there.
Such an amazing event. We're just about a week out from it, happening October 1st, so next Saturday. You can get involved with the Black Tie Amateur Boxing Dinner Show. There are still tickets available, but they will sell out quickly. And again, this is all to benefit the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. And Hal Rosnick, creator of this nonprofit organization, I thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for carrying your father's legacy on and creating your own path forward with such amazing work and helping so many individuals in our surrounding community. Thank you for the work that you do.
And Melissa, thank you for having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, Hal, you are always welcome. Every single year, I hope to continue promoting your event. And just if you ever want to pop on, Hal, you're more than welcome. Like I said, I think it's amazing what you're doing. And right now, I know this is a pretty new nonprofit, but we're living in a time where kids more than ever need support for not just violence, but for mental health. I would think boxing is a great outlet for a lot of these kids and young adults. So I really do thank you for what you're doing.
No, thank you for having me. And we'll look forward to coming back next year.
Looking forward to it. Hal Rosnick here on WICC. Again, it's called the Chick Rosnick Boxing Club. Their big event, their major fundraiser happening next Saturday. Tickets are available, but they're going to go fast. So go check it out online or give them a call as well.
A look at what's happening across Connecticut. Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Governor Lamont. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Doing fine. Here's a good weekend.
Yeah, well, it's finally fall. Are you a fall person?
It's my favorite season.
Yeah.
I love it.
Me too. Me too. I love it as well. And always a reminder to folks to go out to your local farms and support them, especially now. It's really the season to go for sure. So, Governor Lamont, I got to be honest. I have questions all over the map today, like all over. So we'll just kind of in no particular order. I'm just going to honestly go down the list, try to keep them within the same category, but no promises here. Let's start with drugs. Let's go right into it because one of our top stories this week was pretty troubling. Three children in New Haven brought us. They ingested some kind of a substance in school, all ended up in the hospital. Reminded a lot of folks of what we saw in Hartford late last year. So the first thing, obviously, is what can we do? First of all, we know in Hartford they made it a rule that you had to have Narcan in all schools. Is that something that is in place for every school in Connecticut, or was that just something Hartford did?
That's something in place. We've got the Narcan available. We have it either at the school if they want it or nearby the school with ready access, if that's more appropriate. It is shocking, though. I mean, there's more illegal guns and there's more drugs on the street and there's more addiction out there. And these are all illegal drugs, right? We haven't legalized anything at this point. And this is just a, and when it sneaks into your schools, you know that you've got a problem. And a lot of it is related to talking to the kids and making sure between parents and older brothers and sisters and coaches and teachers, you're right there with these kids, knowing everything they're thinking about, doing everything you can to prevent it. It's tough to stop it at the door, but we can do better.
So Jerry in Stratford kind of piggybacking that story and saying, Governor, these children ingested THC gummies with no field sobriety test for marijuana intoxication. Is there any chance that you would go back and look at legalizing marijuana here in Connecticut?
Well, I just say, Jerry, remember the two incidents that Melissa just mentioned all happened, you know, while these things are not legal. And they're legal all around us. So maybe some older brothers go into Massachusetts. I'm afraid that cat is out of the bag. What's really important, I think, is to get those illegal pushers off the street. Those are the guys that are, you know, lacing it with fentanyl. Those are the guys who are dangerous, in many cases, murders what they're doing. And I think having a regulated, safer alternative is one way to get them off the street.
On a national level, Governor, we got a question yesterday from an anonymous listener who said there are pitches to put metal detectors in schools. I think this is a national push. But our own Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy thinks that's kind of overkill for our schools. What are your thoughts on having metal detectors in schools across Connecticut?
Look, I wouldn't require it, but, you know, when I taught at Harding High School, this was 20 years ago, they had metal detectors. Every school has a different set of parameters. What we are doing on a universal basis with state support is hardening or making our schools safer. Rather than have five different ways you can get in and out of school, maybe having one or two, so you know how people are coming in and out, making sure that the windows are secured. So we are doing putting up cameras. That can be a deterrent, not just a way to see who did it. And so those are all things that we're rolling out across all of our schools. Metal detectors, I think that's up to the local school board.
We're talking to Governor Ned Lamont, taking your questions this morning. We have an awful lot of them. So we had a couple of questions, I think, on illegal immigrants coming into the United States and specifically here in Connecticut. This question came from Barry, who said, Governor, will Connecticut be accepting illegal immigrants from the southern U.S. border to our sanctuary cities, within our state borders anytime soon? Or has that already been happening without citizens knowing?
At this point, no. You obviously see busloads of immigrants coming into New York, and you've heard the games they're playing, Martha's Vineyard and other places. To my knowledge, not yet here in Connecticut. Two things. Will we accept immigrants if asked? These, you know, kids often fleeing oppression, like from Venezuela, do what we can to help them. The answer is yes. Longer term, you got to close down the border to illegal immigration. This is out of control. Close down the border to illegal immigration and make it easier for people to immigrate legally. Right now, it's turned on its head.
This was kind of a question that was also connected. Norma asking, Governor, are we a sanctuary state?
Look, we don't go and prosecute people who come into the state. That's not what we do. A couple of cities like New Haven go even further. But look, I don't jail people. I don't send them back. You know, they've come here. We do our best to take care of them. But this is just a short term. You've got to make sure that border is secure. Right now, it's not secure.
Is it a municipal job or is it a state job to let citizens know that immigrants are coming?
Well, I guess both. I don't know why it's an either or, Melissa. But my knowledge right now is we have not seen what you see, for example, in New York and certainly those border towns as well. But that said, we've got to be standing by. I've got to make sure that I have, facilities. Say, for example, some of our now closed hotels. They were very busy during COVID because we had to get people out of congregate settings. And we can get those going as needed. Right now, no need.
And we're talking to Governor Lamont. As I mentioned, questions all over the board here. Governor, Steve wants to know, are you going to ask natural gas companies to put down more lines so people can get less dependent on oil?
Fair question. Obviously, a lot of people have moved from oil to natural gas over the last couple of decades. Look at the price of oil, but then look at the price of natural gas. So, They're both going to be squeezed this winter in a big way. In terms of, mandating more natural gas lines to more homes, we'll work with, the natural gas distributors on that, try and get the best balance there. But more importantly, I want to bring down the need for too much cost. We're spending too much in home heating, too much on natural gas, too much, on electricity. And one of the ways we can do that is weatherize our homes, make sure they use a lot less heating oil, a lot less natural gas to heat their homes. That's the best solution of all and also saves you a lot of money this winter.
And Governor, before we take a quick break, a question from Susan this morning. Republicans have been trying for years to rewrite the 830G law. For people who are not familiar, we talk about a lot, zoning. If this law was enacted to establish a required percentage of affordable housing, why then does it not recognize housing already in place before passing the law?
I don't think people have been trying to reform 830G for years, but right now, a lot of people, for the first time in probably decades, do want to move to the state of Connecticut. So there is more need and interest for more housing in downtown areas. And so I strongly believe this should be left up to locals. This should be subject to local control. We've asked all of our towns, please come up with your plan where you'd have more worker housing, more housing for teachers, firemen, cops, single employees. And you do that, there's no need for 830G. You're already doing it.
I mean, wouldn't you say, Governor, actually, to kind of piggyback that, wouldn't you say that's why you didn't feel comfortable passing the law in the past legislative session was because they wanted to put the control in the hands of, like, contractors, essentially, and not they wanted to remove public comment and municipal leaders? What I mean, that was something you were against, which was why it was one of the reasons it didn't pass.
I think there was a study, and people worried which way that study might go on 830G. But you're right. I want to do everything I can for local control. But now, towns, it's your job to step up, say how you'll allow a little more housing, say, in your downtown area, wherever you think it's appropriate.
We're back chatting with Governor Ned Lamont here on WICC, taking your questions. Let's go to Kathy in Fairfield, who said, Governor, what is going to be done about dangerous roadways, especially I-95 between Westport and Milford? People are speeding upwards of 90 miles an hour, and it just seems like it's getting more and more dangerous to drive.
Certainly, in the last few years, the number of speeders, especially during COVID, went through the roof. And we had a lot of fatalities, even though there were fewer people driving. And a lot of that bad behavior has continued. Two things. What I can do, Kathy, structurally is fix a number of these exit ramps. By that, I mean that's where the congestion takes place. That's where the traffic can stop suddenly. That's where you do see some accidents. And that also adds, 10 minutes to your commute. And we're adding on more state police, every 6 months. And they are doing more traffic stops. We can read your license plate. We will get you. We could do that electronically, and we can track your vehicle. So we're doing everything we can to enforcement and also make the design changes.
And then, Governor Lamont, I think there's some confusion with our listeners. We wanted to just clarify, if you don't mind, your stance on electric vehicles. What exactly would you want to see happen here in Connecticut? For example, is it going to be a mandate that you have to buy an electric car by a certain time? If not, you'll be penalized. Like, could you just kind of break down and clarify what your stance is on electric vehicles and your goals in mind for Connecticut?
Yeah, that's certainly not the case. There won't be any mandate. What California has done is they've said by 2035, which is, 13 years away, they want to make sure that you only can sell all electric vehicles. And, we're going to take a look at that. I have talked to Ford. I have talked to General Motors, whether this is something that is, A, either very costly or B, something they won't be able to honor. And they're very sympathetic to that. They like clear clarity of what it's going to look like. You can't do it in 3 years. That would crush people. But I think over 13 years, it may make some sense. So we're going to look at that in the next session.
Okay, so to clarify, if people are going to buy these cars, how much is the cost to put these generators, I guess, or like how much do we think it's going to cost? Because I think that's the big reason a lot of people don't want to do electric. I know there are some who say the fires with the batteries they're worried about, but honestly, it's only the ones you hear about in the news. I mean, there are a lot of electric vehicles where there's not really an issue with that. But I think the issue that people have is the cost of them. I mean, they're really expensive. You want to get one of these electric cars today, they're a pretty penny, to put it simply.
Yeah, well, first of all, like I said, there's no mandates, period. We have doubled the number of electric cars on the street just in the last couple of years. And thanks to the infrastructure bill coming out of Washington, we're going to have hundreds of charging stations up and operating all on our major highways and in the state. We're doing it in some smaller facilities as well. It's sort of interesting to me, Liz. I mean, churches are reaching out to us saying, please, would you put some charging stations in our church parking lot. One more reason to go worship on a Sunday.
Wow.
So I think you're going to see it readily available. So there won't be that won't be a deterrent. And by the way, mainly thanks to the feds, there's significant credits and discounts to buy electric vehicles. So the cost of them is going down dramatically, and the operating cost is much less.
And Governor Lamont, switching gears, we know that you've talked about this on the show. You and I have talked about this a lot, which is the need to support mental health individuals here in Connecticut. We know about 211. We know nationally there's 988. We know that the infrastructure bill, or that became law, I should say, that looked at a huge portion of money that's being invested in mental health. But this question from Beth I thought was a good one, which is, are we planning on ever investing in bringing back mental health facilities, not mental health hospitals, but mental health facilities where people aren't going either to emergency rooms because they're having a breakdown, or they're ending up behind bars because police arrest them for being neurotic? I mean, it just kind of reacting, or however they're being. Any idea if we would bring back any kind of mental health facilities? We have some in Fairfield County. We have a couple I can think of. But even so, it's not very advertised that people even know that it exists. So that's a question from Beth this morning about more mental health facilities in Connecticut. Governor Lamont? Governor, can you hear me? There we go. I can hear you now. Yep, I lost you there for a second.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, you're okay.
Thanks to the legislature on a bipartisan basis, not everything happens bipartisan in the Capitol. Mental health was it. Our biggest commitment to mental health in the history of the state. And that means everything from neighborhood facilities. I was at a Cornell Scott Hill down in New Haven. You know, it's a mile away from the emergency room. So, we know how mental and physical health can be related. So we're taking care of people with, coaches and detox and employment, getting people back in the game. We're doing a lot in and around our schools, working closely with clinics there, as well as working closely with the parents just to make sure the kids stay in the game. That's something very important to the kids, by the way, which is of interest to me. A little surprising to me, actually. And so I think you're going to see mental health more widely distributed, as you suggest, not simply going from the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. But as far as like creating, and again, I'm very careful with saying mental health hospitals because I know the depiction people get, but having like actual facilities. The mobile units, I think, are great, like for schools and if you're in a public place, but making it more, having, I guess, more readily accessible facilities for people to go to if they needed to stay for a week or had to stay for like a weekend or a night just to kind of collect themselves or speak to a therapist or something. I don't know if those kinds of facilities exist across the U.S. or even here in Connecticut, but like that, I'm just wondering if that actually, as I'm thinking out loud, if that's something.
Well, they do. I mean, that's what I suggested with Cornell Scott, which we visited yesterday, and those more like Cornell Scott. That's a major facility. You can stay there for a night. You can stay there for a couple of weeks. If it's more severe, we certainly have hospitals, some of which are secure just to protect you. So we have a variety. It's not like the old days where you have an incident, you go to a mental health hospital, you'll be there for decades. We have a lot of halfway facilities where we give you the coaching and support and treatment that you need to get back up on your feet.
And Governor Lamont, last question. I know Mary and a few other listeners asked this in various ways. Essentially, your first run at governor, you promised to keep the taxes down. We have an incredible surplus here in Connecticut. And while there have been efforts to try to give back to citizens in Connecticut, people don't feel like it's enough. Ultimately, it's very hard to live here and feel like you can afford living here. And the question is, what can be done about that?
No, Mary, affordability is enormous. Look, I took over, as Melissa said, and we had $2 billion annual deficits as far as the eye could see. And we got our budget balanced without raising income taxes, some no governor done in 40 years. And now a few years later, because we've had 4 years of a balanced budget, now surpluses, we've served up probably the largest middle-class tax cut in history, $650 million. Money that went right to people that needed. The question is now, and this is part of the political debate, give us more money now help us for the future by paying down our long-term pension liabilities. I think I've got a balance there. But remember, paying down that big unfunded pension liability is going to save your kids and your grandkids about $450 million a year. So those are either tax cuts or investments in education and mental health for years to come. So that's the balance we've got. We have to do more in the new session. We will.
Well, Governor Lamont, we really appreciate having you on this morning, taking all of our questions. Always an honor to have you here. And we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you. You too. That is Governor Ned Lamont here on WICC. We will put all of his answers up on our podcast at the end of the show at 10 o'clock. You can find that at WICC600.com.